Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, broadcasting from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Penny Hardaway's Memphis Tigers going to be back inside FedEx Forum tomorrow. Nationally ranked Houston is in town. Could be shorthanded without arguably their best player. We'll get into that in the next segment. Jeff Calkins will join me a little after 5 o'clock, but right now he is the best NBA insider in the whole wide world. He works for ESPN. His name's Adrian Wojnarowski. Please make him the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parish Show Big Interview, presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar, using food and wine to create memorable times.
So, Woj, I love having you on anytime, under any circumstances, but it's especially cool today because tonight on NBA Countdown at 6 o'clock Central, in advance of an NBA doubleheader on ESPN, it's Oklahoma City, Denver, Portland, New Orleans, you are going to have a sit-down interview with former University of Memphis standout James Wiseman. Obviously, it was recorded earlier, so you have already sat down, conducted the interview. We'll get a chance to watch it tonight. Just in general, first, your takeaway from sitting down with the guy who could be the number one pick in the 2020 NBA draft, with a guy who graduated high school right here in Memphis.
Yeah, Gary, I found him to be very earnest, intelligent, determined. He's an impressive young man, and I think that had been the feeling about him prior to what went on at Memphis and that, and he certainly came out of there with a lot of you still have that feeling about him. He is certainly, I was able to watch him in the gym a little bit in Memphis work out, and in Miami where we did the interview. He is the first time I had physically been in his presence. He is big. He is long. He is skilled. Just watching him, his ability to step out, shoot the ball from deep is impressive. But we got into what happened in Memphis and how he felt about it, what it was like to be in the middle of that. And he used the word hurricane. It was like being in the middle of a hurricane. And then his reasons in the end for moving on.
He released a statement when he announced that he was leaving Memphis, and I don't believe has spoken on the record to anybody except you since then. So when he is explaining his decision to leave the University of Memphis basketball program midseason, what is his explanation for doing what he did?
Two reasons, Gary, that he cited in the interview with me. One, paying back the $11,500. He said, I didn't have a way to come up with that money within, you couldn't go to outside sources to do it. He made a joke to me about, I couldn't use the Jay Williams, I think, created a GoFundMe right. page or suggested creating one. He goes, couldn't use that. And then the idea of injury and the chance to obviously to be, he's certainly very much in contention to be the number one overall pick. We'll see how the lottery shakes out, but certainly the teams who are drafting in that area, in that region, or who you expect to be based on the records right now, all have a keen interest in him and want to see more and be able to spend some time with him and all those things. But he's certainly at the top of their minds. And so he knew that at the time of leaving Memphis. And I think, I think it was, as you can imagine, I think being in the middle of that swirl, expressed no hard feelings toward anybody at Memphis, not Penny Hardaway, said still has a good relationship with him, and, you know, talked about how much he did, you know, he wished he could have played with that Memphis team, and loved the idea when they all came in together about trying to win a national championship, and, you know, said he loved the time he spent on campus as a student, and, you know, heartbreaking was a word he used, but felt in the end that that leaving school, starting to prepare for the draft, was for him, and I think a difficult choice, because I think he had a great affinity for the university, for, again, the program, players, coaches, but felt like for him, he wanted to start down that professional path now.
Talking to Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN. He's on Twitter at WojESPN. He's got a sit down with James Wiseman tonight on NBA Countdown, 6 o'clock Central on ESPN. None of the coaches have publicly said a bad word about James Wiseman. None of the players have publicly said a bad word about James Wiseman. But I do know that privately, they do feel let down. Perhaps betrayed is too strong of a word, but it is true that James not only was a part of what could have been a national championship team and then left, but he recruited specifically Precious Achiuwa to come to Memphis. And Precious will tell you that the main reason I wanted to go to Memphis is to play with James Wiseman. Otherwise, I don't know if I would be here. Is James conflicted at all about, you know, some people have used the word regret. Does he regret the situation that he whether he's got good reasons or bad reasons, he did put a coaching staff and some teammates that really did fight for him, both publicly and privately, he did leave them in a bad spot.
Well, there's no question. I don't know. He never said to me that he regretted the decision. But what I did sense with him, he regretted how certainly this isn't what they all imagined at the beginning. And I think he felt, you know, certainly in his mind, a victim of what he felt was an unfair ruling by the NCAA. That certainly can be debated. And he talked about being on, he had a phone call with the NCAA in one of the administration buildings where they asked questions and asked him, you know, about Penny Hardaway as a booster. I'm not sure that an 18-year-old is supposed to know the definition of that. And, about the money, the $11,500, which he has contended that he did not know about at the time. Penny gave that to his family to make the move when Penny was at Memphis East High School. But I certainly felt, Gary, from him, a sense of disappointment that he didn't get to make the run. Certainly he made the decision and certainly left people behind who may or may not have been, you know, thrilled with it. But I didn't sense from him any feeling of, I wish I made a different decision. I didn't get that from him, but I do think he was sensitive to, like, the dreams that group had together and the potential that that team had. And remember, as you know, the suspension was on November 20th, and it was December 19th when he left. So he stayed around camp. You know, he was around the program for at least an extended period before he made the decision ultimately to pack up and leave and sign with an agent.
Talking to Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN. He's got a sit-down on NBA Countdown tonight with James Wiseman, the former University of Memphis standout. I have had people tell me that, and I think this probably goes without saying, if not for the suspension, he would have remained a member of the University of Memphis basketball program. But the aspect of the suspension that he wasn't allowed to travel with the team, and when they started traveling and he got a little detached from everybody, and he didn't feel like he was a part of it the way maybe he once felt like he was a part of it. Did he expand on that idea even a little?
He did a little, and I don't know that that part of it shows up in the television part of the interview, but it did in our broader conversation, Gary, that there was a sense of isolation when the suspension happened, right? Because the team goes on the road and you're back and you're not around it. And I do think that was difficult for him. I mean, he talked about going back to his dorm room at the height of this and crying every single night, just how emotional it was for him. And, you know, we talked about the day of the Illinois-Chicago game where he was getting the temporary restraining order, and he was literally racing to the arena almost around game time. He said it felt like you know, an AAU game, right? You show up 10 minutes before and you run out and play. Like, that's what it felt like to him. And I think, you know, certainly that was all part of, you know, the emotion of this. But he talked at great length about just how emotional it was and how, he wanted to be out playing. It's not what he imagined. He felt like, you know, getting hit with the ineligibility issue, the eligibility issues, you know, after game one. He said the first time anyone suggested to him that he could be, that he would be declared ineligible was after game one, even though I think we know it was a topic. I think you were reporting on the possibility of it for some time. You know, he was technically eligible early on. And so, frustration, CA conversation to have that we didn't necessarily have. But certainly I think it's an interesting draft, Gary, because now you look at the guys at the top, you know, many of whom we're used to, unless they're an international player, Luka Doncic, or we're used to seeing them in college basketball, but you look at James Wiseman, RJ Hampton, LaMelo Ball, you know, who are both down and out, who both were playing in Australia, James Wiseman, who just plays three college games. You know, you've got three guys who might be among the top five picks who don't come out of the traditional March Madness, you know, college basketball cycle. And I think this may become more common. I think we may see more guys going, you know, that wasn't Weissman's intent. He wanted, you know, obviously he went to Memphis to play at Memphis, but we know LaMelo Ball probably had greater eligibility issues. But the money you can make overseas and down under and a very short season there, you know, for some guys, not for all of them, but for some here as we keep moving forward until one and done is gone, I think we'll probably see at least a couple of these every year.
Just one more thing on James Wiseman. Obviously, he makes the decision he makes the week before Christmas. Does it matter to NBA executives at all that he chose not to play college basketball, or it's a total non-issue? Hey, he's a talent. We're drafting talent. He will still go wherever he was going to go, even had he played a full season at Memphis.
I think, Gary, it does matter. And the sense that I've gotten from some teams who might be in a position to draft him is it's a question they want to ask him. They want to ask him about what you said about his reasons, his decision to move on, to not come back from the suspension. You know, the financial part of it is going to be part of that conversation. The injury are certainly part of it, and they understand that. The financial part in terms of the $11,500. And then, but I think it's not a disqualifier, but it's not something that, you know, that teams haven't talked internally about, because you want to understand everything you can about a player you're going to draft up that high. And I think he expects he'll be asked about that, and he's going to have to, you know, that's a question he's going to have to answer to teams too on. But that being said, he is a player who has a very good chance of going number one overall. There's a lot of, you know, teams have been scouting him, you know, through, you know, obviously even prior to his three games at Memphis, you know, they saw him in, you know, at the All-American game practices and camps and the things where pro guys can get into. So he is a player that these guys are all very anxious to spend more time with, get in the gym and see more. But there's a lot of enthusiasm for him coming into the league.
Talking to Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN. Again, he'll have the sit-down with James Wiseman tonight on NBA Countdown. That starts at 6 Central on ESPN. A few more things just about the NBA in general. People here obviously excited about Ja Morant. He is projected by us locals as a future All-Star, maybe even a future MVP candidate. Nobody wants to put a ceiling on what this young guy can do. Is the enthusiasm similar around the rest of the NBA for Ja Morant's future?
Well, it is significant around the rest of the NBA. I don't know if it could be – I mean, I know how people in Memphis, how excited they are, so it should be greater there. But there is tremendous he's impressed everybody in the league. And I think coming into the league, people expected it. They expected him to be, you know, an impact player, and they expected him to be a guy who could, you know, help transform that Memphis franchise in the post-Gasol Conley era. Did anybody expect that this would be a team that would compete to make the playoffs. I don't think anybody expected that. I don't think Memphis expected that. And so it's certainly a testament to him and Jaren Jackson and Brandon Clark. They've got a great young core there and in a group that they can keep building off of. But I think there's very few players, Gary, you know, that are ticket sellers in the NBA. And I think Ja Morant, like, it's funny. I remember years and years ago, an executive said to me, we were talking about what the definition of a max player is. And he said, a max player should be able to do one of two things. Help you win you a championship or sell tickets, put people in seats. And ideally, you have a guy who does both.
Right.
And I think this is one of those guys, Gary, who when you look down the road, he's a guy who's going to do both. And those are pretty rare.
John Beilein leaves the Cleveland Cavaliers organization earlier this week. His reasons are well documented, first reported by you. Do we think he coaches college basketball next season?
I'm going to be really interested in that, Gary, because you know I think he's going to have to let the fog clear a little bit. I think he left there pretty in some just turmoil, strong word, but just really it was hard for him. This was a hard year for him, a difficult ending. You know, eight times, and I know he sort of said this on his way out in there when he met with a team, like, hey, eight times I have brought my program into college. You think of all the different jobs he took. The ninth time, you know, and it worked. The ninth time, it didn't work. And, at the end at Michigan, Gary, I know he was very frustrated with, it wasn't just the recruiting, the traditional recruiting, but it was the losing players so quickly in one and done. When, like, Iggy leaves last year, and you go, okay, I can't keep that guy for 2 years, right? Like, or 3 years. Mm-hmm. Like, when the players like that leave, and then having to spend your whole spring chasing through the transfer portal, right? You're out looking for the fifth-year guy. You're out looking for the transfers. And I think that had become really, like for a lot of guys, tiresome, and a part of it they didn't love. And so I think that made the NBA more attractive to him. And the idea with the Cavaliers was, you know, he signed a five-year deal. Four of it was guaranteed. And I talked to him. I had him on the podcast in the preseason, Gary. And I said, what would success look like for you at the end of this? And he said, you know, getting into the playoffs in the fourth or fifth year, whenever it would be, and having a team that people like had an identity, that people around town were proud of and how we played. And so I don't think he was planning to be in this for a very long time. This was going to be, for him, you know, a little bit of a life change, certainly a big life change being in the NBA. So the idea of him starting over in college and having to recruit at a school where it's 67, like, I don't know how much longer I'm going to do this. So are you really just recruiting, like, one cycle of players? Now, I know there's a lot of interest in him, and there's plenty of schools who would love to get at him. Another factor, too, Gary, was geography. He, you know, he had a pretty good chance at the Orlando Magic job 2 years ago, and part of why he didn't go further with them was he didn't want to move. He didn't want to move his family again, his wife. You know, Cleveland wasn't too far from Detroit or from Michigan and where they were. And he's got grandchildren and extended family in that sort of upstate New York, Cleveland, you know, Michigan quadrant. And so I would be curious too for him just to pack up and go down to wherever, right? Yeah. Somewhere else in the South or out West. So I'm not saying, but I also know this about John Beilein. He's very prideful. He's not going to want to go out like this. Nobody wants it to end this way. And so I think those are all going to be factors for him when he decides, like, if I come back and do this again, am I doing it for the right reasons? Am I not just doing it because I don't want it to end like that? Do I want to be a college coach again? We know he's going to have the opportunity. And so I think those are all things he's got a little time here to think through before the spring cycle of the coaching carousel starts in college.
I'm wrapping up here with Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN. Last thing before I let you go, is there a college coach right now that interest NBA executives? Because obviously, on a very basic level, this is going to go under the umbrella of college coach went to the NBA, failed, like most of them do. Is there a guy working in college right now that front office executives are at least intrigued by?
Oh, I still think there's a few. And, like, you know, people, listen, John did, I mean, you can mark it as a failure. I think for John, it might have been a little more generational,
right,
than it was college. I think coaches like Jay Wright, Tony Bennett, they've been coaches who there has been a lot of interest in recent years. I think, you know, like, I don't know if Chris Beard is a candidate yet, but I've heard a lot of NBA people You know, when they go to you know, they've watched what Chris Beard has done, and you talk about them when they go watch a practice. They go, I don't know if there's a better coach out there than this guy. And so, you know, not every college coach is for every organization, but I don't think, because listen, Billy Donovan's been a success in the NBA. I think he's been a great success in the NBA, and I think certain personalities. John yelled a lot. John was on guys. John's style was different than Brad Stevens and Billy. And there's an adjustment for those guys. And they went through difficult, you know, Brad's first year wasn't like, it was an adjustment for him and with Boston. And he worked through some stuff and he figured some stuff out and he had a great, you know, to help get her. And Brad kept adjusting and kept adjusting at it. And then to, you know, look, they were up 3-1 in his first year, chance to go to the NBA Finals, and all of a sudden, Klay Thompson happens, right? And so, I think that the college coach is still going to be a consideration. It's not for everybody, it's not for every situation. But, like, listen, there's assistant coaches who don't make it as head coaches in the NBA. There's, like, it's just like, hey, we're not going to draft a European player because of Darko. Well, there's like, come on, like, there's not everybody, not every feeder system on any level bats a thousand, right? And so, I do think that we're going to see this again.
That is Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN. He's on Twitter at WojESPN, and he's got a sit-down interview with James Wiseman tonight. NBA Countdown, that starts at 6, and it'll be followed by a doubleheader, Oklahoma City, Denver, then Portland against Zion Williamson and the New Orleans Pelicans. Woj, you're the best. I appreciate your time, man, and I'll see you real soon.
Gary, you're the best. Thanks for having me on. We'll talk soon, brother.
All right, brother. I'll see you. That's Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN. Looking forward to that Wiseman interview. It'll be 6 o'clock Central on NBA Countdown. And I didn't bring it up with Woj because, you know, we're talking. He conducted the interview. I don't want to get bogged down on one very specific thing. Yeah. But I will say, when I asked the question, why, you know, leave Memphis the week before Christmas and, you know, the risk of injury, which I guess that could be a real thing for anybody. But like I've said before, healthy players don't leave their college teams because of the quote risk of injury. Zion didn't do it. Ja didn't do it. You know, when I say that no healthy player has ever quit a top 10 team midseason strictly to, in their own words, focus on the NBA draft, besides James Wiseman, like that's a factual statement. He's the only one who's ever made the decision that he made. Now, he was under some unique set of circumstances because of the suspension, but just like I've, you know, you still get this every once in a while. People will say, well, you know, Penny Hardaway cost him his eligibility. No, that's not true. Penny Hardaway's decision to provide the mother with what was deemed an impermissible benefit cost James Wiseman 12 games. It did not end James Wiseman's college career. James Wiseman could be on the Memphis team right now playing tomorrow if he wanted to. I don't know why some people still can't grasp that, but I get it on Facebook and other places. Well, you know, it was Penny Hardaway that is responsible for losing James Wiseman. No, James Wiseman quit. He could be on the team right now. Could he be on the team right now? Yes. He could have been on the team playing January 12th and every game going forward. He chose not to. He quit. Now, he quit under a unique set of circumstances, but he still quit. He had the opportunity to play college basketball if he wanted to. And the explanation being, well, out of fear of injury, I can't argue what his fears were, but I can just tell you other players don't quit their teams midseason out of a, quote, fear of injury. And the other reason was the paying back $11,500. And as he tells Woj, I didn't have any way to pay that back. Well, that's a little disingenuous because it wasn't like the NCAA was saying, we need $11,500 from your pocket by January 12th or you can't play. That's not the way those things work. They set you up on a payment plan and have it be affordable payments. And by the time he has to play the bulk of that, my understanding was he'd be off to the NBA. He didn't. The requirement isn't you owe a charity $11,500 or you can't play again. And then you go, well, I don't have any way to get that. So I guess I can't play. That's not the way this works. He would not have had to pay $11,500 before he stepped back on a court. My understanding is it would have been a very, relatively speaking, small and achievable amount of money that would represent a first payment in what would ultimately be many payments, and then you'd ultimately have it paid off. And he wouldn't have to pay it off until he was literally a multimillionaire in the NBA. And as I've said many times, this isn't allowed, if you will, but he would have never had to pay back the $11,500 anyway. Mm. Somebody could have paid that back for him. A Memphis booster could have paid it back. You just hand James Wiseman $11,500 cash, have James Wiseman write the actual check to whatever charity you got to write the check to, however that works. And the NCAA can't argue with it because he clearly has $11,500. At that time, he would be a multimillionaire in the NBA. It wouldn't raise a single eyebrow. This is my long-winded way of saying, I all Woj can do is ask the questions. Then you listen to the answers. Then you tell people what the answers are when they ask you, what did he say? But those answers, they're really flimsy. It sounds like you decided to quit the team for whatever reason, or you were talked into quitting your team for whatever reason, and then you got to come up for reasons why you did it. And those are the best reasons you can come up with. Well, I was scared I'd get hurt. Well, then why isn't any other player scared to get hurt? Like, why isn't Anthony Edwards right now scared he's going to get hurt? You know, Cole Anthony did get hurt. Come back and still playing. Why isn't he scared he's going to get hurt? Literally, no healthy player quits the team's midseason to focus on the NBA draft. So I just don't accept that. I mean, I can't. It's his right to do it. All I can do is explain to you exactly how unique, rare, unprecedented it is. And then the other one, well, I didn't have $11,500. You didn't need $11,500. You didn't need that money right now. And so when he acts like, well, what was I supposed to do? Where am I going to get that money from? You didn't need the money. So they seem really, like empty explanations to me. But that was the thing I was most interested in. You know, what is his, you know, looking back a couple months later, what's his actual explanation for why he decided to quit on his teammates and coaches the week before Christmas? And if the explanation is as Woj presented it, and I'm sure that it is, I find it to be, again, pretty empty. I'll talk to Jeff Calkins more about it a little after 5 o'clock. But when we come back, the Tigers, minus James Wiseman, will be inside FedEx Forum tomorrow. Nationally ranked Houston's in town. Might be shorthanded without a key player. We'll get into that next. You listen to The Gary Parrish Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.